Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Hello, I'm Al Coley, host of Ghosts in the Valley. Today we have Tom Warner, who recently portrayed himself in the Netflix series of Unsolved Mysteries, episode number 5, Berkshire's UFO. And now 51 years later, Tom is looking back on that time and talking about his experience on the Unsolved Mysteries episode. And also, Tom has a book coming out, Beyond the Stars. In the next 3 weeks, I'll be covering the Berkshire's UFO and digging into the events that happened on September 1st of 1969. Here's my conversation with Tom Warner. Well, I'm excited today to have Tom Warner on the show. He's the author of a book coming out, Beyond the Stars. Tom is also the young man who was abducted in the new Netflix Unsolved Mysteries series they just released. It was episode number 5, Berkshire's UFO. So how you doing tonight, Tom?
I'm doing better than I did that night, Al.
I imagine your life's been like a hectic whirlwind.
Do you know, Al, you know, when they first told me Netflix, they wanted to give me a warning because knowing what was coming, of course, I didn't necessarily believe them, but everybody recognizes me wherever I go. So today I was doing construction work, helping out a buddy, and I tore my back of my jeans, and I'm like, I still had to pick up some things for my family, right? So I go into a store. I'm looking scruffy. I have a shirt on me that is, just a scruffy shirt, ripped jeans, and a woman's in back of me, and she goes, "You're Tom Warner." And I'm like, "No, I'm not."
Well, that depends, Do you like me or don't you?
Well, she says, "No, we watched you last night on Unsolved Mysteries, Berkshire UFO," and I'm like, "Oh." And she goes, "No, you did really great." And I said, "Oh, thank you so much." She goes, "It was very disturbing." And I said, "Yeah, it was for me too."
Well, before we get into the abduction that happened in 1969, are you still in the Great Barrington area?
Al, I live in the same house that we've had here, my family, for 6 generations. They first moved in here in 1835, and I'm in the same house I grew up in. Where this took place was right out my door.
That's awesome. You're still in the same area.
Same area, same house.
And as a child, before the abduction, did you believe, if you can remember back that far, do you remember believing in like UFOs or ghosts or anything like that?
Well, I always had mental telepathy since I was a child, and it was a learning experience what it was. And I had a number of instances, which are in my book, by the way, that make you wonder how far back did these experiences go. And so I never heard of a UFO up until that summer of 1969, And the first time I heard of a UFO, we were up on vacation up on Lake Champlain, a little town called Willsboro Point it was. And we're sitting by a campfire, and my mother had gone up. My father was, you know, just talking to a couple of us boys, and he got a real serious look on his face, and he started telling the story of a UFO. Of course, I still hadn't heard of a UFO story. I didn't even know what it was, you know? And he was telling how his boss was renting a place somewhere over in Vermont across the lake, and the wife had came frantically home and said there was a UFO, and the husband said, calm down, I will go and look at it in the morning. And the next morning when he went out, it was like a 30 to 40 foot circle burnt. The grass was all burnt just to a crisp, you know, and perfect circle. And my father looked at us, he says, if you ever see one of these UFOs, you boys run. And my father had this horrified look on his face, which I'm like, just like, it just sent chills up me at the time. And I'm like, well, I'll never see one of those. And I, you know, that'll never happen, you know?
Right.
But little did I know, that was a little over a month later, it did happen. Less than that, really.
I was doing some research on the Berkshire Mountain area and Great Barrington and Sheffield. And is this known for heavy UFO activity and paranormal, or was this a one-time event?
Well, at first I didn't really think it was, you know, until all of a sudden I started doing some research myself. And of course, after the show aired, so many people came forward to tell me, yeah, well, they saw a UFO. And a lot of it was right in my neighborhood. In fact, in 2017 and 18, two students at Simon's Rock, which is a half a mile from my house, reported seeing a UFO on two different years. And that's less than a half a mile from my house.
More of my research also brought up the fact that in 1969 was the first lunar landing. So do you think that landing on the moon, and this is according to these reports, after the moon land, there was tons and tons of UFO activity in 1969 with all the satellites and all that, and everything's in space now, that it's maybe,
you know, I mean,
generating more activity.
Who really knows? I mean, you see what happened, you know, Neil Armstrong. Of course, we were into the, you know, the man landing on the moon. I mean, that was incredible. You know, I mean, it was like, you know, my God, are they going to just, what are they going to do when they step down? Are they going to sink out of sight? No one knew, you know?
Right. I remember watching it as a child. Yeah.
Yeah. We were just thrilled with it, you know, and there was a point where, you know, they lost communication with them. And, you know, I remember my father saying, I hope they get back to that other side, you know? And remember, the whole country was excited. The whole world was excited with Apollo 13 when they landed on the moon. It was like, wow, that was a first, you know?
Right.
You know, life was, you know, I was just, you know, starting to get into watching baseball, and so much was happening that year, you know? But little did I know what was going to happen on September 1st, though. I mean.
Now, are you surprised by all the attention that has been generated since the release of the Netflix series?
Well, yes and no. You know, because there's only been one other person who has been actually witnessed in a UFO beam and disappear, and that was Travis Walton. And so when that was revealed that I was the second, or actually the first, because mine was in 1969 and Travis's was 1985. That was pretty shocking to a lot of people. It wasn't shocking to me because it happened to me, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I really had no idea what the reaction was going to be. The only reason I came forward on all this was because I knew how I felt inside, where, you know, we kept this story pretty quiet for like 50 years, which is which, you know, in a small town, it's pretty hard to keep something that secret that long. I mean, it would come out in dribs and drabs, but, you know. So once it was out, the reaction, I was more surprised how many just absolutely recognized me no matter where I went. That was, I think, the biggest surprise.
Yeah, because a lot of people thought that the new Unsolved Mysteries without, you know, like a narrator like Robert Stack, it just wouldn't work, you know, and it just was the opposite. I mean, it has really, and according to the a couple directors I've listened to their interviews on other podcasts, was that it just took off like wildfire, and it's one of the most watched unsolved mysteries in history.
It was for a number of reasons. It's because it was so shocking, and the reason it was shocking was it happened. So many people saw it, and they didn't see it from a distance. Like the neighbor watched me from probably 60 to 75 feet away. That's close up to see someone disappear in a UFO beam.
Right.
And, you know, in like the other cases, you know, it was like no one wanted to talk about it. Like Jane Green, for instance, her kids saw it because they lived down the street from me. And her kids saw something. The mother saw something, but yet they never spoke of it. They just didn't talk. No one talked about it. So coming forward, it was good for everybody to come forward and talk. And then I began to think in the process, there must be so many more people out there. And people just started contacting me and thanking me, you know, saying how brave I was to come forward. And I'm like, it's okay now.
Marcus Clark, one of the directors of the Berkshire UFO series, he said that it gave you guys a lot of credit for coming forward, and also it will open up doors for other people to come forward, which I found out through my investigations here. A lot of people did come forward in 1969 that was never documented. I mean, like the radio station.
Well, I'll tell you something about the radio station. So the radio station, they didn't say a lot about it, you know, in their news broadcasts. They said enough where they said that, you know, I remember them saying there was something funny going on in the South Berkshires. People were reporting seeing a UFO. And I'm going like, I was just relieved that I wasn't the only one that saw the UFO, you know, and I didn't know how anybody else's experiences were or anything. I was just relieved I wasn't the only one. And it was like, okay, that's confirmed. It's good. And they didn't get into anything else. But about in 1989, I know that it was the year my daughter was born, and they did a rebroadcast on the subject from WSBS. And I don't know who it was that was famous at the time, but they had a talk show host, and you could call in and they'd forward, you know, to talk to the person. But by the time I got the nerve up to talk, the woman who answered the phone at WSBS said, I'm sorry, that was the last call. And she says, you're not one of the Warner boys. And I said, yeah, I am. And she goes, we watched the UFO right over your house. But at the time, I didn't think of anything. I didn't take the person's name down or anything like that. I just go, yeah, yeah, okay, great, you know?
It was astounding that, like the police department, you know, if you look at the police records, I mean, how many calls came in for sightings?
Well, most of the reporting was really to the, you know, to Tom Jay, you know, because people were comfortable with him. Yeah, he said to Jane, you must have been smelling swamp gas. That's actually in my book, by the way. And it was a reference to a story where the government blamed these people seeing a UFO on swamp gas coming out of a swamp. So that was like a way of saying you're smoking weed or something, you know. They just said, oh, no, 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 you smelled swamp gas or something, like, you know. It's your imagination. But, oh, geez, Mrs. Green, she was mad as a hornet at him, you know.
You call somebody a liar, basically, you know, and there's a lot of people just don't believe no matter what.
Well, you know, I could really, honestly, I could care less what people, you know, you tell a story, you have a witness, it's, you know, everybody knew it was true, you know? I mean,
and you know, back in 1969, there was no social media, cell phones to take video or pictures with GPS tracking. So, you know, it was basically...
Did not talk about it from sibling to sibling.
Like, were you bullied or harassed in school for even mentioning it, or didn't you mention it?
At first, we didn't talk about it. It was kept out. Something went out on out here. We didn't talk. You know, we're pretty protective. You know, we live 2.5 miles out into the country, so we're pretty, you know, no one really knew about it, but slowly it came out. You know, I was, by the time I was like 12 or 13, I was getting a little bit bigger. No one really picked on me. But, you know, I did have an incident when I was 13 and got in the discussion, and somehow it came up, you know, and I'm not one to back down on my story or anything. And so I don't remember who it was, but they said to the priest, he's seen a UFO, and the priest put his arm around me and says, "You have Satan in you." I was pretty hot. I was mad, you know? And I'm like, how dare you say that to me? And I walked out the door and walked home from, it was like Catholic school. Yeah, I walked home. I just left. I was really upset, you know? That really stood with me, you know? So some people, you know, ask me about, because I get into this stuff in the book, because my favorite saying always is, you know, listen to the angels, fly with the aliens. And the meaning of that is, we don't know exactly what's out past all the way out to the next galaxy and the next galaxy. We don't know. We just have no idea. And how I look at it is, once upon a time, everybody thought the Earth was flat. And they were flat earthers, you know, they're flat. And some guy somehow discovers that the Earth isn't flat, and there's some really good fishing if you keep going. And now everybody knows the Earth's round. Yeah, there are some people who still believe it's flat, and you go off the edge, right? But anyway, so here I am, 10 years old, telling people that there are other planets like Earth past that we can't see. And I was like someone who said, like, the Earth isn't flat back when everybody thought it was. But now, all these years later, all the things I said are starting to be slowly proven.
I really wish that the radio station WSBS would have talked with DJ Tom J. I wish there was some backup tapes of that, you know, to hear today.
Yeah, it was the first announcement was very short. It would have been like, you know, a very short announcement. But the 1989 program, I wish they had kept, because so many people called in. And, of course, those people are probably long gone, you know. So we're fortunate, you know, that Jane Green, who's, you know, in her 80s, and Tom's mother came forward and told her story with her son. And, you know, those people are, you know, few and far between, you know. So, you know, you just have to be thankful they're still around to confirm the story.
But to give DJ Tom J credit, I mean, he did call the police and ask if there was any calls on that.
Yeah, I couldn't confirm that conversation. What was interesting about the police report, and, you know, getting in the police reports, after Unsolved Mysteries had aired, I get a call from this fella, and he was like a 30-year veteran of Vermont State Police. And he said, I have a story to tell you. And I said, yeah, go ahead. You got my attention. And he said, my wife watched the program, you know, when the first night it came out, and the next morning she goes, you got to watch this program tonight. And he said, I sat down and watched the program. And he said, but when it came to your painting that you had done that was on the show, he said, I sat straight up. My hair went on the back of my neck, stood up. And I said, and he goes, that's it. That's what I saw. And at the time, he was in a small town off Long Island, on the north shore of Long Island. His father was chief of police. And they saw exactly what I saw. And exactly what I portrayed in my watercolor painting. I'm a watercolor artist. And I did the painting of my abduction. And he said, that's exactly what I saw. He says, it went right across the sound. And I blew up a map, and it was going straight for the Berkshires. Then he goes, so when his father got home, who was chief of police, he said, Dad, this happened. He goes, yeah, we're getting calls on it and stuff. So they are currently looking to see if there were any calls written down on that night, because the records may have been kept. So we're checking on that. So it's ongoing.
That'd be nice if they could find that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's away right now on vacation, but he's going to do a follow up in about within a month. We're going to know about a follow up on that. But we're hoping.
Well, I got to be optimistic. Now, on the Netflix series, they had the on the Unsolved Mysteries, they gave a timeline on how they think the UFO traveled. And yeah, I know we had mentioned earlier that I don't think you said you were too big on a timeline because it was everywhere.
You know, that was my impression. I mean, I don't know. Who knows if it exactly went the way it did? I mean, that was just introducing one character to the next. And the truth is, you know, when Jane saw it, it went up over the mountain. Now, did it come directly to my house? Did it go to Housatonic where other people had seen it? Did it go from Housatonic to Sheffield and then back up? We'll never know. I didn't think that was so important as showing, you know, the closeness of where this was, you know, in relationship to where everyone was, you know?
Yeah, can you believe it's been 51 years this year, right?
It's 51 years this year. I mean, it seems like, to me, it's etched in my mind. And it was like, I can just see it. I mean, it's not like it's this happy event, you know? Some people are like, oh, you're so lucky. No, I wasn't. You know, it just scared the daylights out of me, man.
We'll be right back after this short break with the rest of the story.
Imagine going to a website or walking into a retail store and everything you see is only $1. Impossible, right? Well, you might think so. But Dollar Tree will prove you wrong. Dollar Tree is the nation's number one destination for value shopping. All of their stores are well-lit and crammed with all kinds of hidden treasures. Dollar Tree offers a plethora of merchandise that includes many national and regionally trusted brands. It doesn't matter if you're looking for housewares, dinnerware, candy, snacks, stationery, or holiday needs. You're going to find it at Dollar Tree. You can shop at your hometown store or shop online for exclusive offers, manufacture closeouts, watch videos, and join their Value Seekers Club. On top of all that, you can have your order shipped for free directly to your local store. To visit DollarTree.com, click on the link in the show notes to let them know we sent you. Doing so helps keep our podcast going. Dollar Tree, where everything is only $1.
Yeah, now we're getting to the part to where you can share your
story.
Right.
It was a dark, stormy night.
Yeah.
No. Okay. No, I got, okay, so it was September 1st, and it was kind of like a night like, you know, I'm hearing, we call them August crickets, because they start in August, the crickets. And they'll go from August right through, I'd say middle of September, but they're really loud at night. And so I said to my mother, I want to go over and do coloring, because I always went over to my neighbors, the Shaws, and Debbie, who was a little bit older than me, always did coloring with me. You know, her sister Jane talked about it in the TV show. And we went over, and I'm just coloring away, and all of a sudden I get this mental telepathy. Now, I've had mental telepathy before, but this was so strong that I stopped coloring, I got up, and I walked toward the window. And I said, Debbie, I think I got to go home. And she goes, why? I think God must be talking to me from those clouds. I got to go home. Telling me I have to go home right now. And I ran out to where the kitchen was, and I made eye contact with Jane. Jane was on the phone and that over to my right, and the grandmother was over by the window, another window to the left. And they had this just startled look on their face, and I realized it was because the look on fear on me. And I said, I gotta go. And I just ran out the door, and you went through one room, and then you get on the last, the final room, which was like a hall, which was the coal room, where the coal room was, which was dark, and I bolted out of there, and I was flying. And then I got to this point where there's a big rock or boulder that was in the yard. And it was a path. we'd gone back and forth so many times to the Shaws, to the Warners, Shaws, to the Warners. There was actually a dirt path. And when I hit that spot, all of a sudden, all the sounds, the crickets, sound, everything got, the noise just got sucked away. And it's like time went in a slow motion. It was broken down like to the milliseconds. It was, and I thought something felt odd, and I looked to my left, and a UFO just, boom, just dropped right out of the sky. And it was probably, I'm guessing, you know, anywhere from 35, 40 feet above my head. It was low. And I'm staring at this thing, and because I'm, you know, it was so surreal. You want to take in every detail, and I'm seeing lights, color lights like I've never seen the colors before. I mean, it's hard. You can't describe something you've never seen before. And part of this UFO was going in one direction, and next section was going another direction, and the final section was on the bottom, was spinning in another direction. But it wasn't making a sound, and a beam come on. And this beam was like the color, I would say like a whitish blue, but just intense brightness. And my hands jerked back, and it was like I got air sucked out of me, and then I'm in like a fog. And the one thing I remember the most was seeing this girl crouched in the corner that I later identified as Melanie. When I got in high school, that's who it was. I, you know, eventually saw her once in high school. She was older than me. I was coming through a door in high school and opened up the door, and there she was. And I was like, huh, it was frightful.
Yeah, I've seen you before.
Well, yeah. Well, I knew where I saw her before. That's why it was like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, you know? And I remember seeing other kids. And anytime I remember when I was seeing another kid, I'd look down. And then I seen what looked like some sort of alien, and then another human-like. And then I remember seeing a table, and then fixated on these some sort of panel. I remember just, and then different instruments and lights, and then it was over. And when it was over, it was like a blink of an eye. And then I came to just as I was being let down onto the ground. And only instead of when I was running towards my house. Only this, I was being laid down facing the Shaw's house, only near my property. And I was in a UFO beam. And then my brother yells to me, run. I can't move. The beam's holding me in place. And mental telepathy again said, we'll be done with you. We'll be done in a minute. We'll be done in a minute. And just relax. We'll be done in a minute. And in a minute, we're done. The beam went off. I was able to stand up. I looked at the UFO. It slowly rose. I had to slowly rise to clear the trees. And then, whoop, off it went.
I think we talked earlier about when I was telling you about the UFO over my county in 1994. And I found it astounding that the UFO that was reported in 1952 over Washington, D.C., and 1966 in Portage County, Ohio, and 1994 in Trumbull County, and yours, it they all have a similarity in that there was no sound.
No sound. Everyone said the same thing. The Reed said there's no sound. I said there are no sound. You know, everyone said that. They're just like, it's not only that this UFO was making no sound, there was no sounds around, which was bizarre. You know?
Right, and that's what I hear from, like, when I was telling you about the 10 local law department officials chasing this UFO in 94 for 50
right.
miles, and there's no sound. And I found that odd that even in your case, you know, you're on the craft and there's no sound.
No sound. That's what was the bizarre part. Now, what they didn't tell you in the show, okay, there's a couple of things they didn't tell you in the show, was after it left here, it was spotted close up, just like me, a similar experience, up in Willsboro, New York, where we were on vacation. And the thing is, it went over a family, and the mother came out, and she's screaming for the kids to come in, and the brother, of all these girls. He's under the beam saying, take me, just joking, right? It didn't take him, by the way. But it was in that area looking around. And she said, and she described it, and each one described it to me the same way as what I saw in my painting. They described it the same. On the bottom, there was these just bright, bright lights and a beam and everything. And on the outside, it had different colors that were going around. And they said it crossed Lake Champlain, and she said, and I quote, in a damn split second, 1 second, and it went across the lake. Now, that's 6 miles. That calculates out to over 20,000 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's the pilot I just spoke to recently for the United States Navy. Just told me the same thing, that, you know, they're going Mach 2 speed, and this thing passed them like they...
Standing still. Yeah, I mean, incredible speed.
And this came from a naval pilot, you know.
Now, I want you to think about that a second. So we're up at Lake Champlain, right? We come home back to Massachusetts. A UFO comes over me, abducts me, and goes back to where we were on vacation. Now, I don't know what the odds are, you know, but that's incredible.
That is, yeah.
Now, what got even more incredible, Al, is 2 weeks later, it happened again to me, which was not in the show.
So you had actually three abductions?
Well, the second one, no, I didn't. I wasn't abducted up at Lake Champlain. I was here.
Oh,
at the time.
Okay.
So on September 1st, 1969, it went to where I was.
Oh, I see. I understand. Okay.
Now, those kids were interviewed by the Plattsburgh Air Force Base the next day. We grew up during the summers as teenagers. We'd all lay on the beach. We'd all be looking up at the sky. We're all looking for the same thing, UFOs, or seeing if we see anything. None of us came and told our stories about that until I was in an interview on Coast to Coast. And my friend, actually Tom Reed, was in that interview too. And it was Coast to Coast with Dr. J. Andy Ellis, I believe was his name. And my friend, she was in Italy listening to the story, and she got back to me and said, same night with us, and then told her story. And I couldn't believe that we were friends all those years, and we never talked about it.
Yeah, do you find it easier to talk about now?
Well, it is, but, you know, I go into a lot of stuff into my book, not just my, abduction, but also I go into the Men in Black, talking about the Men in Black, you know, deep conspiracy, you know, governments, you know, beliefs, and, you know, human-alien hybrids and events that happened afterwards, because the events never stopped. They went on my whole entire life. But 2 weeks after that happened on September 1st, I was having a catch with my brother. I threw the ball to my brother. He threw it back to me. I threw it to him. He threw it to me. I threw the ball. I released the ball. The ball went 15 feet, stopped, and went the other way past me. And I was shocked. I'm like, what? And as I'm total confusion chasing the ball, my other two brothers are running up with the neighbor who was Jane's brother. And he's yelling to me, did you see the UFO? Did you see the UFO? It was right over Tommy's head. And I'm like, oh, not again. I'm like, oh.
Do you feel like you're being targeted, or?
I knew I was. Wasn't thinking. I knew I was, you know? And so they go, there it is. And I'm looking up, and this thing is using mental telepathy and talking to me, saying, you're okay now.
Getting back to your book, tell us about the book you have coming out.
Yeah, well, I wrote the book really because I really felt that I wanted to help people because, you know, there were things, these events that happened from, you know, like one instance, for instance, at four, there was an attempted kidnapping of me. And these were like, it was like, it would be almost like if Barbie dolls were trying to kidnap you. There were six in the car, and the three guys looked the same, and the three girls looked the same. They all had short, blondish hair, and the girls all had blonde hair. And it was like, it was bizarre. And it was mental telepathy telling me, look, call to your grandpa, but, you know, don't use your voice. And I did. And he came out, and he was a sharpshooter for the New York National Guard, 71st Division, New York National Guard. And he said, driver of this car moves, you're dead. And he says, I want my grandson. And he walked up to the car, and he looked at these people, And I was waiting for him to call the police or something. He looked like he'd seen a ghost. And he said, Tommy, we're not going to talk about this. And we didn't.
Wow. You've had a pretty eventful life. I give you that.
Well, yeah. I mean, you'd think it would get, after, you'd think, oh, my God, after you're abducted, September 1st, 1969, that's going to be it. No, it was the beginning.
Right.
And so I was like, I had all these secrets that I had. I mean, I learned a lot of secrets. And I even came in contact with someone whose father was in the Men in Black. And she goes, you can't talk. You have to stop talking. She goes, you know too much.
Yeah, I know when all my investigations on UFOs and talking to different people, I basically was told by a few people from the State Department and the Air Force just to basically back off.
Back off. And I did back off. And I did back off all through my 30s. And events kept happening. And I'm like, and it got to the point where I was getting this message, you need to talk now. And so I wrote the book because I felt that was a messenger. And I have a message to say to humanity. And that's it. And that's why I wrote the book. So you'll read some pretty wild stuff in there, man. It's like you read it. I read it and it scares me and I wrote it,
Mm-hmm.
And it's like if I personally didn't know that these things that I lived, they would happen and I'd question them. And I'm like, that really did happen. I'd even go back and talk to people and I said, do you remember this? Yeah. And that, they'd confirm everything.
That was kind of brought up to me by the person I talked to through the State Department, which I can't release his name.
Of course you can't.
No, no way. But what he was telling me was, he just threw the question at me, with the lunar landing of 1969, the increase of activity after the landing, and it's well documented. Isn't it kind of ironic that was at the end of that year when they decided to close up Project Blue Book?
Yeah, Project Blue Book was just kind of like, don't worry, people. We're looking into it. Here's our cases. That is a bunch of hoo-ha because, you take the September 1st case, right, 1969. The Plattsburgh Air Force came down and interviewed those kids. I knew personally that they did. They knew that they had some of this stuff on radar because you can go back and get declassified stuff, and they talk about UFOs, and yet they're not in Project Blue Book. And that, why didn't they put that? I mean, obviously, people saw it, but for some reason I think they had enough where they go, okay, there's nothing here now. We're all good now. We're all good. Turn off your porch lights. We're all good here.
Right.
And then it went on, and then you had, for instance, Jimmy Carter says, okay, when I'm president, we're going to tell the truth. Jimmy Carter, good Christian man. He's all about the truth. And he gets president. He does make president. And the CIA director comes up and says, Mr. President, this is a need-to-know basis, and you do not need to know.
Exactly. Well, there's a trickle-down effect there, where you're not supposed to talk about certain things, and that includes the president. Kind of like when Kennedy wanted to take control of the NASA program, John F. Kennedy. And that was shot down, and I believe it's on tape about Hillary Clinton was involved with the UFO program, and same as, like you said, Jimmy Carter. And then all three were basically silenced on it.
Yeah, I understand why. I mean, I can only say one TV program. They learned their lesson from War of the Worlds. Talking about my book, I talked to my aunt back in the day. And she was telling me about when that program came on, a lot of people came into their houses. They weren't there at the beginning and they said, this is only a TV program. This is not real. But other people like my aunt who came into the room, they turned it on and they're hearing this stuff and they're like, Martians and UFOs and all this stuff's happening. And my grandfather, he sat there. And when she found out that it wasn't real, oh, she goes, I was mad as hornets at him. And the whole thing was people were really panicking. And you know, it was Ronald Reagan who came out and said, you know, we have more in common than we have, than we don't have in common. And if we were fighting one particular enemy, we'd have to be united. And what he's referring to was outer space. We're so vulnerable because we don't have it. We're just, we think we're so advanced and the whole bit. And yet we can look at the early 80s and we see those big cell phones that are about 3 feet big, you know, and now we kind of laugh at them.
Right.
And technology goes at like the speed of light, you know, and we're just, everything's always constantly changing.
And I'm thinking myself by talking to a couple of my friends that were involved in that chase in 1994 in our county who were police officers. And like they said, you know, they're adamant that it was not man-made, number one. Number two is it was so more advanced than we will probably see in our lifetime. You know, so
of course.
At any time, if they wanted to take them out, it would have. You know, that's just that simple. I mean.
Right. You know, so some people, the question I often get asked is this. Are they hostile? Well, if they were hostile, they would have wiped our butts off a long time ago, you know?
Yeah, right.
And so if that's the case, you know, we're at the mercy, you know? Really.
Right. And in that episode, it said that you were, when you were running out that back door to run home because, you know, the voices in your head.
Right.
Because what I've been hearing is, you know, the people around your area was seeing what you actually drew. You know, what you actually painted, they saw.
You know, it was pretty damn accurate, the painting, you know, it really was. It was a good depiction, you know. You know, the thing about, did I have changes to me? Yeah, I think so. I really do. And you know, some, you know, I had someone wrote a letter to me saying, you know, maybe your DNA was somehow changed. I don't know. I mean, how would I really know? You know, but it did affect me in the way my ability to understand mental telepathy. And another, you know, this isn't right up your alley here, was when people died, they could talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds bizarre, but it was true. You know. And I write about that in my book, and it's like, you know, it's not a real, you know, oh, I'm going to get a good 8 hours sleep kind of thing here. You know, I feel like I'm always helping, you know, I mean.
Yeah. And I think if anything good can come out of this, you know, and helping other people,
right.
You know, getting through events, maybe something like you went through, you know, that they can relate now because, you know, you were brave enough to come forward with your story along with all the others, you know.
I find this, that people find me. And there's an expression, there are no accidents, they're only appointments. We meet people for a reason, if you're in tune to that. And like, for myself, every single important person that came into my life was there for a reason. And it was up to me to understand that reason. And it took me a while to accept that. It really did. I mean, I was like, oh, you know, I mean, why did I meet this person and they go out of my life or something, you know, especially when I was in my early 20s or something. Gone, you know? And I'm like, well, that wasn't right. Why did they leave? You
know? Yeah.
They all had there's a reason there. And it's like I would be, events would happen. I'd see events before they would happen. I'd end up, you know, I went through a stage where I ended up saving people. Literally, drownings, you know, a number of times on drownings.
Yeah, because you don't really know what your calling is going to be, you know, and what's handed to you.
Yeah, I sort of know it was coming, you know, and it's not like you know, hey, guess what, Al? Tomorrow you're gonna save someone from dying. You know,
you're right,
and you're gonna do that because we're gonna prove that this is real. It's not a fun feeling. You know,
what's really cool about having this job, you know, and talking to so many different people around the world, really in the United States and finding out different spots I want to put on my bucket list. You know, now I put yours on there. Hopefully next year I plan on coming to.
Well, just so you know, Al, that you're welcome to stay with us at the Warner Homestead.
Thank you.
Now, I hope you don't mind. Occasionally there's a ghost in our house, okay? But don't worry. They're only my great-grandparents and relatives and, you know, that sort of thing. So you're all good. You know, you'd be coming because you're going to be looking up at the sky, and I'm sitting out by the fire pit looking up and saying, like, wow. You know?
But, you know, I was looking at some of these old pictures, like that bridge in Sheffield, and it used to be a bridge that you could actually go across, you know, drive across, walk across. Now it looks like there's posts in front of it. It's like it's blocked off.
Well, what happened was the first bridge, it was the oldest covered bridge in the state of Massachusetts. And then some kids got down there and they started a fire in the middle of winter and just to keep warm, and the bridge caught fire and burned. Right, gone. And so it went from the oldest covered bridge in Massachusetts to the newest one. But they did a wonderful job replicating it. So they decided it could just shut off that road. But I was fortunate. Back in 1979, I happened to be at a friend's place, and we went for a run, and we went down the same road where Tom Reed lived. That was Kellogg, off Kellogg Road there, and down Boardman Street, and then we'd come down that lane. And it was, I'm telling you, I didn't know about Tom's, that's where he had his event or anything. But I'm telling you, that was one spooky place.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hit that bridge, there was like bats all around me, and it was a full moon. I'm telling you, we ran through there so fast, and it's like, wow, this is really creepy. But back then, you could still, believe it or not, even back as far as like 1979, it wasn't blocked off yet. So on the new one, when they put up the new one, they said, no, we're not going to have any traffic through here. That was it. When they replaced it, they decided right away they weren't going to have traffic.
Because it's just not safer.
No, actually, the new bridge, you could drive across. It was no problem, but they decided to shut off the road.
Because the activity? I mean, paranormal activity, or?
Well, you know, it was just a road that wasn't really used. It was rarely used. I mean, even back then, you know, it was, people just didn't go down that road. I mean, just, you know.
Because your covered bridge looks like, I live in a town, Newton Falls, Ohio, and we have the second oldest covered bridge in the state. And ours is still, it's one lane bridge you can travel across.
Yeah, that's how this was.
It reminds me a lot of your bridge if you go online and look at it, you know. And our zip here is 44444. A little village we live in. It's not even a city. But it did remind me a lot of your covered bridge.
It's a beautiful covered bridge. It really is. I mean, people go down there just to see the covered bridge and everything. I mean, it's not that you couldn't drive over it. You know, it was designed for that.
Plus, I love to see the Berkshire Mountain. You know, I hear that's really beautiful.
Well, the Berkshires are. You know, I mean, they're very scenic. A lot of people come up from New York or Boston, and of course, they have Tanglewood and all this, you know, very many tourist areas, you know.
When I first heard about that on Netflix, you know, I'm like, Berkshire UFO. I was like, what's Berkshires? Is it a place, or, you know?
It's a county. It's Berkshire County.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, the James Taylor song on the 1st of December, all covered with snow, so is the turnpike from Stockbridge to Boston, though the Berkshires seem dreamlike because of the count of that frosting. You know, that's it.
Well, Tom, we're getting near the end here, and anything you want to say?
Yeah, well, in closing, you know, of course, I'd say, read my book if you want to know the whole story, but also watch the Berkshire UFO, you know, and, you know, just keep an open mind to this stuff. And my whole message was that we have to take care of each other, and we have to take care of this earth, because on technology, if we want to, you know, advance humanity, we have to survive. And we're not doing a very good job at that right now. And there's too much hatred in the world, and, you know, too much greed. And, you know, we have to really consider what we have here, right out here on Earth. Because, you know, eventually, if we needed to get off this place, you have to have the technology to get off. And you're not going to, you know, fly at the speed of light or whatever. You're not going to be able to do it in a Model T Ford, you know?
Exactly. So, well, I love the title of your book, Beyond the Stars.
that's my whole thing is I've been given these images of another planet, and that's the whole thing. It's beyond the stars. The title says it all. It's going to be available just about everywhere once it breaks.
Right, I'll put all links at the bottom of the podcast. So, all right, Tom, thank you very much.
Wonderful. Thank you for talking, and thank you for reaching out to me here in the Berkshires and in Great Barrington, and watching the show Berkshire's UFO on Unsolved Mysteries. It was a spooky night for sure.
I want to thank Tom Warner for being the guest tonight, and it was my honor to have Tom share his thoughts and experiences with us. Next week, we're going to have Melanie Kirchdorfer. She was also abducted by the craft, the aliens, and she's going to share her stories, and I will also share with you events that happened during our recording of her interview. I will have Tom Warner's link to his book at the bottom of this podcast. Thank you for listening, and remember to rate and review Ghost in the Valley podcast on Apple Podcast. We'll see you next week with Melanie Kirchdorfer on Ghosts in the Valley.
Right, and remember, Al, listen to the angels, fly with the aliens.